everybody, and welcome to the Energy Connection Podcast, brought to you by MyBFF Social. This podcast is dedicated to providing thought leadership regarding topics across the energy industry. The views and opinions expressed by the host belong solely to themselves and are not a representation of any other groups or individuals. If you love to dive deep into the world of energy, listen in here.
Hey, good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Phil. How are you? It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while. I guess there's not only have we had record temperatures, there's a lot of new in your life. So if you want to share some good news to our listening friends, talk about energy.
Yeah, well, you know, the good news, I think, is that my wife, Danielle, and I welcomed our baby boy, Lewis John, on June 8th. So we've been adjusting to that, and he's been great so far. He'll be 10 weeks old this coming Monday. We're recording on Friday, the 14th of August. So that's been a big adjustment on our end for sure, but it's been a great adjustment. We're having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Congratulations. Great pictures. If anybody follows Andy on his social media, you'll see Lewis John in many poses. But, you know, the new edition came, but we still have the old edition of COVID-19.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanted to get your thoughts where you are with that and how it's corrupting our energy situation. You know, I can tell you real quick, we had some issues here in Western Pennsylvania that there was a small outbreak at one of the power plants. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. And it was contained, but when you only have, you know, 118 people working, and you had 43 people off for 2 weeks in quarantine because there was like six people that came in with it. A bunch of fishermen friends, I guess, went out and got infected and moved it up the chain, as you know how it spreads. But what's your thoughts? What's going on with COVID in the energy business?
That's a good angle. I haven't seen much of that, but I think at the onset of this, you know, when people didn't know back in March, like, you know, how bad is this going to get? Or is this going to spread just rampant? Will there be any grid reliability issues? And thankfully, so far there haven't. I think that those events have been few and far between. But you know, if in a certain situation, if that were to ramp up and you get a bunch of power plants offline, then suddenly, you know, maybe you do have some issues on the grid. So thankfully that hasn't happened yet. But with regards to, you know, energy consumption in the U.S., we've seen things start to normalize some, actually, domestically at least. So the initial hit to consumption came from the industrial sector, which makes sense. You had a lot of manufacturing plants that came offline, at least temporarily, because, you know, workers were sent home or scaled back operations dramatically. So when you look at industrial consumption of natural gas and electricity, that was down at times as much as 10% compared to where it was a year ago. So it wasn't down 50% or 75% like we saw in some measures of crude oil consumption, but the gas and electricity demand did take a hit. You know, if you look at economic indicators that follow manufacturing, most of those are pointing upward at this point. It looks like we've seen the bottom, at least for now, without being able to tell the future. And we have seen industrial energy demand follow suit. So we're recovering. And so far here in August, we're seeing that type of consumption about on par with where it was last year. The biggest hit that we've seen, and we talked about this, I think, on one of our first podcasts, has been in liquefied natural gas exports. And that's not so much a domestic United States issue. That's because prices are very, very low in Europe and Asia right now. So there's little incentive to go through the whole process of buying supply at a U.S. hub, paying to liquefy it, which is expensive, paying to ship it, which is expensive, and then selling it into one of these other markets without making a profit, and in a lot of cases, making a loss. So we've seen that type of gas demand cut by about two-thirds. We went from 9 billion cubic feet per day in late March, early April. That was all-time record high. Now we're closer to 3 or 4 billion cubic feet per day. And that's stranded some gas in the U.S. And for most of the summer, helped to keep a nice lid on prices.
With the lid on prices, we've seen a lot of stability. We had the hottest July on record. What did that do to, at least here in the PJM region, what did that do to pricing? It seems like it's ticked up a little bit over the last 45 days from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and it has. So that for most of the summer, gas and power prices have been very, very low, historically low in a lot of cases. Talking about natural gas being delivered well below $2 per million British thermal units. And then electricity in most cases for on-peak delivery, well south of $30 per megawatt hour. So there's, that is not typical during the peak summer, especially as you mentioned, during the hottest July on record. In your territory in PJM, there's such robust reserve margins that even during that hot weather, we never really tested the grid. So we didn't really see any price spikes in the power space. We have seen the forward market starting to rise. And that's a different story we'll talk about in a minute. But for being, historically warm in July, we saw record natural gas consumption from the generation sector. We beat the previous record by more than 5% for the month. So that's, we did see an uptick in generation demand, but we did not see many, if any, big price spikes across the country. So even in Texas, which is a very risky market, we haven't seen summer heat translate into major spikes in power pricing. And you could tie that back potentially to some of the demand that's still offline due to COVID, due to the economic response to COVID. So it maybe cancels out some of that peak demand and has prevented any of these electricity markets from really getting out of hand so far this summer.
Yeah, we have seen a couple spikes just in short spurts with our hourly pricing,
Yeah.
But overall, it kind of balanced right back out.
Sure.
Those hot days that we had.
Yeah, I don't know that we've seen any real like demand response events, and I could be wrong there, where we had to call on kind of the last line of defense to prevent the grid from being overloaded. It seems like PJM, with the forward capacity market that we talked about on previous calls, is handling summer load for at least the past couple of seasons very well.
Yeah, I agree. I think we've seen a little downswing, but they've done some testing with the demand response. I think there was like two action days, but it kind of faded away. And instead of from 3 to 7, it didn't come online till like 5 o'clock, which is kind of rare. Yeah, usually mm-hmm. It hits the peak afternoon. But that takes you to, it gives me some thoughts. I was talking about sustainability and demand response as part of sustainability when you're looking at how the grid is being used. What's your thoughts on some of the sustainability efforts going on and the effects that you might be seeing in some of the power curves?
So we've seen so far in 2020, and we've got fairly solid data at this point through May. If you look at wind and solar and the proportion of electricity that's been generated by those two sources, it's up to about 14% nationwide. And that's going to vary pretty significantly depending on what market you're talking about. It'll be a lot higher in California, a lot lower in PJM and parts of the Northeast, but 14%, that's as high as it's ever been nationwide. So we are seeing sustained growth there. We're seeing sustained growth in natural gas fire generation. And the big move has been in coal. Coal has gone from last year representing about 23 or 24% of the generation mix. So far this year, that's only 17%. And if you throw back to a decade ago, coal was around half of all power generated in the U.S. So far in 2020, that's down to 17%. So the sustainability efforts, at least in part, along with market forces, are continuing to drive coal out of the U.S. generation mix. And what we've seen is that with the 5 to 10% decline in overall power consumption this year. It can be attributed to COVID-19. That has not come out of wind. It hasn't come out of solar. It hasn't come out of natural gas. That's come right off of coal-fired generation. And that has been trending lower for a decade. And it seems like that trend is being accelerated this year due to external forces. But the generation mix is always changing. Demand response is considered supply in a certain way in most ISOs, and that's another form of sustainable generation from a different angle. But that's where we've been so far this year, is ongoing growth in wind and solar, ongoing growth in natural gas, very much at the expense of coal.
Well, it seems like Lewis John's going to have a better environment to live in if we continue with clean energy.
We will see. Yeah. We hope.
Yeah.
That technology is always improving, especially on the solar side. There's, you have to assume there'll be breakthroughs in battery technology as we go forward, and just various implements that make it more practical to utilize that type of generation on a large scale.
Excellent. You said the economic thing was normalized, the usage. I don't know. I'm reading about the slower economy. Can I ask you about a slower economy and what it's doing to power and gas? But you're saying it's kind of normal in the usage.
If you look at the economy from the lens of consumer spending, consumer confidence, that's all looking very poor right now. But when you look at, I'm just seeing the Dow Jones News Alert, industrial production rose for the third straight month. The manufacturing sector, at least for now, is very much on the rebound. So it's kind of a tale of two economies, so to speak.
Interesting. That was good information. I didn't know that that was going on, but let me
sure up. It looks like industrial production was up 3% in July from June, was up 6% in June, and 3% is what we expected in July. So it increased pretty much in line with expectations, but just reading further down the story, it's still about 8% lower than it was a year ago. So there, we're not all the way recovered, and that's also reflected in energy consumption, but we are on the way up, I think, when you look at the economy from that angle.
Yeah, and that does fit the metrics that we're about 5% below where we were this time last year.
Yeah, and GDP was down, 34% on a quarterly basis in the second quarter. That's going to be tough to get all the way back from, for sure. But at least manufacturers seem to be back to work for the most part.
Yeah. We have a lot of auto industry business, and that has still been a slow churn there. The plants are running, but nowhere near capacity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the high ticket items that the consumers are still reluctant to take that step. I mean, I've seen where they're giving you a lease or a buy, and if you lose your job within so many days, they'll take the car back and not affect it. So, I mean, they're trying all kind of avenues to get the unused new stock out there.
But housing sales seem to be way up. I've got a good friend who's a real estate agent, and she's incredibly busy right now. People are still buying and renovating homes. It's kind of interesting, the change in behavior you've seen since the beginning of all this. We're not buying cars, but we're still buying houses at a fairly quick rate.
Yeah. The lumber business is one of our good verticals. We have a lot of hardwoods up here in the PJM area. And with the tariffs coming out of Canada, we can't get lumber, and all these hardwood places are running maximum. I mean,
interesting.
It's one of the things we found out. They're drying the wood with the kilns and the gas, and we saw a huge increase in gas usage with a few of our lumber associations.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, go ahead. I was going to say one sector that I don't think is back on track is the natural gas and oil production industry. They're still very much struggling at this point, at least according to most of the metrics that we watch. And that starts to have implications for pricing going forward, which we're seeing this morning watching the market, we're at a new high for the year for prompt month natural gas. Natural gas for this upcoming winter is trading at $3.06. That's the highest that that winter strip has traded in over 2 years. So, you know, we opened up talking about how low prices were all summer, and they were, but the future does not hold the same type of a look. We see prices already on the upswing for the rest of this year and beyond.
When you're saying an upswing, is there a sweet spot in between somewhere? Like you'll see 18 months out, where the curve's coming back down, you know, just off the shoulders and things like that? Or is it just continuing taking a little upticks?
Yeah, so just for reference there, calendar 21, and I'm just talking about natural gas, sure, is trading at $2.86. So compared to what we've seen in 2020 with sub $2 pricing, $2.86 is a pretty big leap. And then the following 4 years after that are all between 248 and 260. So we're, you know, do see the market right now is treating any bullishness as starting to subside beyond next year. But all of the forward curve is very elevated compared to what we've seen in 2020. And I've had, you know, a lot of client conversations and conversations with our account management teams where customers are looking at the pricing that they've gotten this year and saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to buy 22 at $2.60. I'm paying $1.70 in some cases in 2020. And our biggest message right now is like, hey, we should enjoy this. We've gotten some 20 plus year low prices this year for gas and power in a lot of cases, but we can't expect this to stay around forever. We had a very warm winter last year in the Eastern US, a 20 plus year warm winter that went right into a total economic shutdown due to a global pandemic. I mean, if those scenarios repeat themselves, we're all in a bunch of trouble. So, you know, we can't treat 2020 as a realistic type of a downside target for these future years. We need to take what the market gives us and see that with supply down pretty substantially right now, as demand, especially for exports, starts to recover going into the winter, and then we start introducing space heating demand once things cool down in November and December, this market could take off. And we're already seeing that to some degree. That winter strip that I mentioned trading at $3.06 back in March before we really got into the pandemic in the U.S., those same contracts were trading as low as $2.30. So we've seen a 75 cent or so increase on $2.30. That's a significant percentage jump, and we could just be getting started there. So, you know, we do see a very risky market for gas and power as we move forward throughout the rest of 2020 and even into 2021. Producers have some ability to bring supply on quickly, but drilling activity is so low right now that we have major concerns about the pace of production going forward for an extended period.
Yeah. You said it pretty well. When I'm talking to customers, I don't even use the 2020 numbers because it's unrealistic. I move them back to 2019 and say, yeah, you're going to go up 1.5 mils. And people think, yeah, that's outrageous, you know, but when you compare it to 2020, you can't even put a number in there because it's so unrealistic of looking backwards. As we kind of switch it up a little bit, what are we looking at till the end of the year in the energy business? Prices, stability. I saw that you just mentioned a little uptick, but nobody else, no more big shattering news front battery storage coming online next week or anything that's hidden from Tesla?
I hope so. But if I knew about that, I'd be, you know, moving some money in my stock portfolio right now. But no, I think, you know, for the rest of the year, we should watch LNG exports. I think that's going to be the biggest driver along with production of natural gas in the U.S. That's what I've been watching very closely, watching for any sign. I think the market's watching this as well, for any sign that exports start to tick back up, because that's something that the market's kind of gotten used to this summer, not having that demand online. And once that comes back, in addition to winter load, that's going to be a big influencer for prices across the board. One thing we didn't talk about is, I think about a month or so ago, we saw Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company, bought a lot of Dominion natural gas, bought a lot of those assets up in the Northeast, including a stake in Dominion's LNG export facility, Cove Point, which is in Maryland.
Right.
So that, to me, when I saw that, that was a nice bottoming indicator for market pricing. Not that, you know, the worth of a pipeline is directly always tied to what the market's trading at, but I don't think that Mr. Buffett would be investing in that sector if he thought prices were going to stay at $1.75 forever. I think that he sees some opportunity buying up assets while they're cheap. And to me, that was a pretty big indicator.
What I agree. I mean, we were part of build out of that facility at Cove Point. We had we did some engineering for them on some of the pipelines and stuff that they needed a few years
back.
Yeah. What countries are the largest importers of LNG from us? Yeah. So if we look at their economies, it might give us an idea of what's happening.
South Korea, Japan, France, Mexico. But we've exported since the onset of LNG exports in the US dating back to 2016, we're sending gas to 30 plus separate countries. We're not overly reliant on one single country. And back, you know, seems like ancient history at this point, but before all the COVID stuff, and we're talking about the trade deals with China, people are wondering, now China's going to start importing or stop importing, depending on whatever the news was saying that day. China, so far at least, imports very little gas from the U.S. In 2019, they were the 15th or 16th, and don't quote me on that exact number, but somewhere way down the list as far as how much gas they imported from the United States. Going forward, they're looking like an important trading partner for the new facilities that could come online in several years. They'll probably be more reliant on China as an off-taker, but China, contrary to conventional wisdom, is not incredibly important right now for U.S. Exports. If they're willing to take our gas, I'm sure that some of that will find its way into China. We'll probably see an uptick if some of those internal restrictions are lifted, but we do not rely on China at the moment to take off a large portion of that gas.
That's excellent. When I think of China, I thought they had a lot of opportunity for nat gas.
They do, absolutely. And going forward, it's going to be a very important market. But so far, due to some of the trade disputes we've seen popping up in recent years, they've just gone elsewhere. They've imported from Australia and Qatar and other global sources of LNG. They just have not tapped into U.S. supply like other countries have.
Andy, I think we're going to run out of a little bit of time on this one, and I do appreciate getting back with you. Some good information, and we'll bring this back around and see what changes, and we'll make sure we watch the LNG exporting market.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a very important driver, and prices are already up. It's amazing that since late June, we've seen a very significant increase in the forward market for both gas and power. So, not trying to alarm anyone and say that the market's going to run away from here forever, but it is striking to see how much staying power this rally has had, even amid some lingering concerns, to say it lightly, about COVID-19 in the U.S.
Yeah. Andy, great time today. Thanks for entertaining us with all the information on energy, nat gas and power, and some of the great outlooks that you have going forward. I hope you have a safe week, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Phil. Always a pleasure, and thanks for listening.
Thank you all. Good day.